Hey, everybody. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Sipa.
And I'm Did you say Sipa, right?
Yes, yes. And I'm joined by Lucas Vallejos and Kenny Levine. How are you guys doing?
All right.
Pretty good.
All right. Well, we are back in the normal swing of things now that the draft is done and I am back home, and we'll get back into promote, extend, trade. And this week's topic, because I had so much of it last week, is barbecue. So, I hope you're not a vegetarian.
No, funny. No. Now I haven't had good barbecue in a very long time, so.
Well, South Carolina has like a particular style of barbecue that I've never even, I never had before. I didn't know existed. So when I went into the first place and I saw the stuff that they had, I was like, oh my God. So this week we will promote and extend and trade different styles of barbecue, sauce and rubs and such.
Oh, I love this.
Sounds great.
I think that we'll do two of each because I kind of narrowed it down, I guess, to six different ones. So two will get promoted, two will get extended, and two will get traded.
Okay.
First one is Kansas City barbecue, which is kind of thick, sweet, tangy sauce made from molasses and tomato paste. You know, it's the kind of traditional, quote-unquote, barbecue sauce.
I do love some tang.
There is Memphis barbecue, which is dry rub, and it's smoky and spicy flavors like cayenne pepper, paprika, garlic powder. Next, there's Texas barbecue, which is mainly kind of like juicy basting sauce. It's made from like beef juice and stock, vinegar, Worcestershire sauce, spices.
Worcestershire.
Well, whatever. Worcestershire sauce, and then spices, salt, pepper, cayenne, garlic. Very tasty. Next is Alabama barbecues. And because Alabama is ass backwards, they use a sauce made out of vinegar and mayonnaise.
It's white. It's the strangest thing ever.
It really is.
I'm going to go ahead and trade them right off the bat.
I've actually never had it, so I can't, but.
Neither have I, but I'm not a huge fan of the state of Alabama in general.
Hey man, roll tide.
Yeah, and mayonnaise is just gross.
That's patently false.
Patently false.
Come on, guys. next up is South Carolina barbecue, which is a mustard sauce, and it's very, very tasty.
Yeah, it's great.
And then there's North Carolina barbecue, which is kind of hot sauce-based with a lot of spices added in. So this is a hard one. Because they're all, except for Alabama, they're all just so good.
I'm jotting down notes right now. Oh, I gotta get rid of you. Get rid of you. All right, I think I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Trading Alabama, obviously. Trading Texas, though I don't like dislike Texas. It's just kind of whatever to me compared to these other options. Extend is the best option here. You think I'd remember that at this point. I'm going to extend South Carolina sauce because I love it, because mustard is like the greatest flavor on earth. Also going to extend Memphis because I love a good dry rub, and then promoting KC and NC, North Carolina.
That's exactly what I was doing, so.
Nice.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'd probably go KC and maybe Texas. There's a place by where my girlfriend used to live in Illinois that had like very good Texas barbecue sauce. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'd probably extend those to promote Memphis and South Carolina, then I don't know, trade the other two. I can't even, I don't even remember.
Alabama and North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not crazy about either of those places, so.
Now I want barbecue, and getting good barbecue in the city is not super easy. At least not by me.
Yeah.
It's odd that there really isn't, I remember reading something a couple of, well, probably more than a couple of weeks ago at this point, maybe a couple of months or maybe even a year or so ago, about how there's a growing Brooklyn barbecue scene or something like that, but.
I mean, what scene isn't growing in Brooklyn right now?
And it just, I don't know, any kind of growing, quote unquote, growing barbecue scene in Brooklyn just seems too hipsterish. Like.
Yeah, it's not just a bunch of dudes, like, copying barbecue that they, you know, saw on the Travel Channel one day. Like.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty much how all Brooklyn food goes.
Like, there's a lot of good food.
There is. Like two or three, like, really good fried chicken places that I've frequented. One of which Pete Alonzo is currently obsessed with, called Pies and Thighs.
I love Pies and Thighs.
Pies and Thighs is amazing, yeah. We should send him an email and see if
we can. Yeah, if we could get a Pies and Thighs sponsorship, they want to send us some food. Where do we? Let's make that happen. Yeah, let's get right on that.
We'll have to look into that. All right, well, moving on now to less interesting stuff like the Mets minor league system. Syracuse, they went in even 3-3 this week, and they are 8.5 games behind Scranton and are in third place for the International League North Division. The Binghamton Rumble Ponies went 2-2 to start their second half. And they are in a three-way tie with the Redden Fightin' Phils and the Trenton Thunder for first place in the Eastern League Eastern Division. Lucy Mets had a very successful start to their second half. They are 6-1, and they are in sole possession of first place in the FSL South. And that is 1.5 games ahead of the Clearwater Threshers. The Columbia Fireflies are starting their second half much like their entire first half. And they are 1-2, and it's basically three games into the second half, so it's a giant dog pile for second place in the South Atlantic League Southern Division. The Brooklyn Cyclones went 2-4, and they're an even 4-4, which is good for second place in the New York Penn League McNamara Division, and they are a half game behind the Aberdeen Ironbirds. And last but not least are the Kingsport Mets, and they started their season off 4-1 and are a game and a half ahead of the Johnson City Cardinals, first place in the Appy West. So our hitter of the week this week is someone that is near and dear to Ken's heart, yep. And that is Dilson Herrera. He played in 6 games this week, and he hit .455. 520, 1,000, with 10 hits, 3 doubles, 3 home runs, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts, and 1 caught stealing. So
that'll
just
play.
Yes, yes, it will. So that 700 BABIP will do wonders. For anybody that became a Mets fan, I guess, recently. Why you would do that, I don't know, but...
Yeah, first of all, what led you to make this great mistake with your life?
Yeah, bad choice. I mean, if you thought 2015 would be the norm, no. Mm-mm. It would definitely not be.
Yeah, we get one of those a decade.
Yeah, pretty much. But for anyone who's not familiar with Dilson, he first joined the Mets in August 2013 when he was traded by the Pittsburgh Pirates, along with... a player to be named later who turned out to be relief pitcher Vic Black in exchange for Marlon Byrd and John Buck. And the Mets had a pretty good system at the time. And Dilson was ranked as high as 4th by us in 2015. He was behind only Noah Syndergaard, Steven Matz, and Brandon Nimmo. And his stock cooled a bit, but he retained a lot of that value. And on August 1st, 2016, the Mets traded Dilson along with 2015 third round draft pick Max Wattel to the Reds in exchange for Jay Bruce. And Dilson's time with the Reds wasn't bad, but it wasn't exactly good either. He had some shoulder surgeries, and he was given a few major league opportunities, but he didn't exactly run with them. And they eventually released him last offseason, and the Mets signed him to a minor league contract at the beginning of this season. As crazy as it sounds, he's still only 25, and as we've seen this year, he still has a little bit more in the tank. Maybe it's because, you know, AAA, the ball is as quote-unquote juiced as it is in the major leagues. Maybe it's because he's fully healthy. Well, whatever the case may be, he's hitting pretty well in Syracuse for this season. He's hitting 259, 354, 585 with 15 home runs and pretty decent peripherals. Basically a 3-to-1 strikeout to walk rate. But he's having a pretty good season. He's mainly a second baseman, but he's been getting a lot of time at third this year. And when he was with Cincinnati, he got a little bit of time in left. And I don't think that anybody necessarily could have predicted that he'd be doing as good as he is right now. But wouldn't it be nice if he was doing this in the major leagues and the Mets still had Ross Adolph and Luis Santander system?
Oh, that's a good point.
J.D. Davis is doing pretty good in the role that he's in. He's hitting 276, 342, 464. But I don't think that anybody could have necessarily predicted that he'd be doing as well as he is either. And I don't think that it's really that outrageous to think that Dilson could replicate that batting line.
People forget Dilson came up when he was 20.
Yeah. And he hasn't been healthy or gotten, in my opinion, like a legit major league spot shot since 2015. Really, like he got like 100 at bats with the Mets in 2015.
Yeah, he was roughly a league average hitter in both 2014 and 2015. Obviously, with some issues, the batting average was never particularly good. It was mostly slugging heavy, but 20 and 21.
And then shoulder injuries are like death to hitters. So no kidding, he wasn't good for couple seasons.
Yeah, and especially wasn't he playing through it for like far longer than he should have been playing through it?
Yeah, he got his first. He had two of them, and he had both of them in either August or September. So to be clearly the end of the year.
Right. Basically, the year the Mets traded him, he was hurt the whole season, if I remember correctly. And the Mets, being the Mets, had him playing,
right,
as they do.
Yeah, 2016. Let's see. Yeah, that tracks.
I
remember a lot of. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I mean, he seems like a legit. I don't think it's ludicrous to consider him a legit prospect at this point. Like,
yeah,
he's 25.
Yeah, I mean it's not old at all.
He's a year younger than J.D. Davis,
right? And there's a clear explanation for the struggles the last couple of years. Like, dude should be getting a little bit more hype than he's gotten so far, I think.
And even if you take his batting line and say, you know what, he's in AAA, let's take away 20 points from the batting average, mm-hmm, and the on-base percentage. I mean, he's hitting 260 now, so he'd be hitting 240 batting average, and he'd be getting on base at, let's say, 330. Mm-hmm. 240, 330 is still not bad when you consider that he has 15 home runs, even if you want to cut that in half.
He legitimately hit 30 homers in the International League this year.
I'm wondering if he made a swing change or something.
How big an effect that's having, the juice ball was having on the International League. How many guys is he ahead of in dingers? He's currently sixth in the International League in homers with 16. So the league lead is 24. So yeah, he's having a pretty great year.
I really do wonder if he made some swing change that. Because he had some pop, but not this much pop, and it's enough.
He always did have a decent amount of pop, though.
That
was always kind of his thing, wasn't it?
I mean, this seems like more than I would expect given the previous profile, even with
and the he's ball. he's never had an ISO near 300.
Right.
Like he's almost never had an ISO near 200. So
I don't know if we'll ever I mean, Syracuse isn't that far, but it's far enough that I'll never get there. So hopefully we'll get some sort of reports on him at some point. I would honestly like to see him in the majors. Unfortunately, he probably doesn't have the arm strength to hack it at short, so not really a viable option if they want to.
He really shouldn't be playing third.
No. No.
You know.
I mean, put him in left field, honestly.
As I'm fond of saying, the bar for left field defense, especially with the Mets, is extremely low.
Yeah, like, are you telling me Dom Smith and J.D. Davis are better defensive outfielders than Dilson Herrera? I'm going to go with no.
Right, well, that's why I brought up J.D. Davis, because, you know, third base, left field, that is exactly what Herrera has been doing.
Yep.
So that's the exact role. And again, I mean, it is looking at the trade and signing Dilson in retrospect and applying everything that we know now, but still.
It's not as if we were fans of the J.D. Davis trade in the first place.
Yeah.
All right.
I love me some Pickles, though. I hope we get to see him in the majors at some point.
He's also just like a lovable doof.
Yeah, he's definitely a pretty big doof.
Between him and Ruben, I'd like to see both him and Ruben Tejada get a shot at some point this season.
I'm pretty sure that the last time that they were both on the major league team, the Mets made the World Series.
Yeah, there it is. Proven fact.
If this trend continues.
Yeah, exactly. And Etch's been fine, but he's just kind of boring. I'd be really excited to see Dilson and even Tejada just because the story's good.
All right, well, our pitcher of the week now is someone much more obscure, and that is Michael Atañez. He started one game this week for Kingsport, and he went 5 innings of shutout ball. He gave up 1 hit, he walked 2, and he struck out 8. So a little bit of Atañez's history here. He was signed on the first day of the 2016 to 2017 international signing period, and he signed for $35,000. The stuff was good, but he was kind of an older prospect. He was 18 when he signed, and literally his birthday was July 3rd, so he turned 19 the next day. He pitched the DSL team that year. He posted a 4.64 ERA in 21.1 innings over 5 starts, and he allowed 23 hits, walked 6, and struck out 21. Whatever numbers, but important is that after the season ended, he had Tommy John surgery, and he missed all of 2017. So he returned in 2018, he came stateside, and he was assigned to the GCL Mets, and he wasn't particularly good. He made 7 starts, and he pitched out of the bullpen 4 times. And he posted a 7.64 ERA in 35.1 innings, allowing 41 hits, walking 24, and striking out 33. So the peripherals and the numbers, basically everything trended in the completely wrong direction. He is he does have a pretty good body. He's 6'3", 215 pounds, so that's like ideal for a pitcher. And before his Tommy John surgery, he had a decent fastball. It's out in the mid-90s. Reportedly, it topped out as high as 97. So, you know, information is obviously scarce because he was in the Dominican and then had Tommy John and then the GCL. So we'll be getting more reports about him as the season goes on. But depending on how you want to look at it, the glass could be half full or the glass could be half empty. If you want to be optimistic about Otanias' future, he has the physicality and the fastball to be a solid pitcher, and time will tell. If you want to be pessimistic about his future, he's going to be 22 years old soon. He's in Kingsport, and he's still very rough and raw, and he's missed a ton of developmental time. So we're looking for the more optimistic outcome, but I don't know. The Mets don't really have good luck when it comes to anything.
You could say that again.
Yep.
I mean, it's tough to have any, like, insightful comments on pitchers like this. Like, what are you going to say? He's got one inning of work, or he's got five innings of work this season, and from that I glean
one. Ace.
Exactly. Yeah, right? So, I mean, cool. More potential high upside guys in the lower minors. Always a good thing.
Yep. All right. Well, those are our players of the week, and we will be right back after this.
What if all your breaking news alerts had a voice? What would that sound like? It would sound like Today Explained. It's a daily news podcast from Vox. I'm Sean Ramaskaram. Every day, my team and I take one essential news story, politics, Me Too, movies, sports, science, and we break it down into 20-minute episodes perfect for your ride home. Subscribe to Today Explained on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, from Stitcher and the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hey, I'm Spencer Hall.
I'm Holly Anderson.
I'm Ryan Nanny.
I'm Jason Kirk, and we're the hosts of the Shutdown Fullcast, your Avengers of College Football podcast. It says here in the script I'm to riff on what that means, and basically what I mean is it's all already spoiled.
Every Tuesday, we talk about everything from cooking disasters to pro wrestling to unfashionable pants we wore in middle school.
We also do talk about college football every now and then, like mascot fights, announcers fleeing the booth early, and unfashionable pants that coaches wear now.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it should be taken, subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Ahoy, Mets fans. It's Brian from Amazing Avenue Audio, the show, with a quick news bulletin. My co-host, Chris McShane, recently released an album with his band, The Los Hot Quesos. It's called Hot Queso, and it is phenomenal. I had the pleasure of seeing these boys in the Bronx for the record release party on Saturday night, and it was everything you want a rock and roll show to be. The album is so great. Go to hotquesos.com and pick it up digitally or on vinyl. I recommend the vinyl. Enjoy. Hot Queso.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Seifer, and I'm joined by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Lavin, and this week we are going to take a deep look at the Columbia Fireflies. I was absent from the show last week because I was down there. I went to 6 straight games on their last homestand of the first half against Asheville and Lexington. And I looked at their roster. I literally saw every single player on the roster there. Everyday players, bench guys, starting pitchers, relievers. I like baseball, and it was starting to get a bit much.
That's one way to make sure you don't get screwed by the rotation jigged around. You just stay there for 6 days and see everyone.
Yeah. And I did almost kind of get screwed. I should have seen Simeon Woods Richardson twice, but they moved his start. But I got to see Bryce Hutchinson start instead, so not a complete miss. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I have a lot of notes. I didn't type anything up. So, who are you interested in talking about first?
Why don't we start with the good and talk about Mauricio before we talk about all the bad?
Well, he was our hitter of the week last week, and seeing him in person, it really bears out the numbers. I mean, he is offensively and defensively a gifted player. Last year, you know, there were few people that actually saw him since he was in the JCL for most of the year and then Kingsport for a couple of games. So it was I was very lukewarm on him, I guess, because it was kind of hard to, you know, put a face with the numbers, just had to have been able to experience him, I guess, is a good way of saying it. But he really, I feel like he's going to be something special. The swing is nice from both sides. It's very quick. It's nice and level. He's very lanky and thin, so you can see. And he is hitting with a decent amount of pop. So when you figure he starts filling in more, some of those doubles that are going into the gaps or off the wall for ground rule doubles are going to start turning into home runs. defensively, he was not good, not bad. He was just kind of there. I mean, I guess the one danger is if he does start getting thicker, that he's going to slow down a little bit and won't be able to cover as much range at short. But he has a very good arm. I think he could handle third. Possibly could be thrown in the outfield. I don't know how comfortable I would be. I guess something like that, we need to see how he matures and, you know,
I think a lot of that would depend on how the bat develops too, right?
Yeah. Overall, though, I think I have faith in the bat. The swing, it's just a very, very nice swing. Like, it just, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to, you know, describe things over a podcast like this. But I would recommend people to go back a week to when he was hitter of the week. Look at the GIF. It's just such a nice swing. It's just whippy. It's just fast. Just bam, you know? Mm-hmm. Very aesthetically pleasing.
It's looked to me like he has a lot of, like, wrist involvement, which, you know, bodes well for power down the line.
Were you pleased with it from both sides of the plate? Was he stronger from one or the other?
He mostly hit from the right side. I think it was only one game where he was hitting from the left side, or just a handful of at-bats. He has a little bit more power from the left side. It's a little bit more uppercutty.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas from the right side, it's almost like completely level. You know, plane on the swing. But it's just a very nice swing.
Yeah, I mean, if his hands are good and he's got strong wrists, tweaking it to get a little bit more angle shouldn't be too challenging?
No, I don't think so. And it's just, he has a very fast swing, so, you know, good bat speed, so he can stay behind, you know, that one fraction, half fraction of a second, you know, and then just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, depending on what kind of pitch he's seeing.
How was he in terms of pitch selection? Because that's usually the issue with lots of these young.
I don't have my notes for him in front of me. I have other people's, but I mean, he hit a couple of mostly singles, a couple of doubles. Nothing really leaps out at me of any major weaknesses. You know, being exploited by, you know, breaking balls like certain other players were that we'll get to. But he just looks overall like a budding, I'm not going to say a budding superstar or anything, but a budding, you know, really good guy.
I mean, I still worry a little bit just because it doesn't look like there's a ton of present either patience or power. And I think you need one to be an above average hitter. I know this is something we said with Ahmed for years, and that said with a lot of these guys, where like, okay, the power may come eventually. Until it does, I'm a little more bearish than most people, I think.
Totally real, you know, that's totally fine. I think that I'm not sure what the park, you know, effects are in Colombia, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. really nobody was hitting. I don't think I saw a single home run.
Oh.
Actually, no, I think one. Juan Uriarte hit a home run for Colombia. That's the only one I could really recall. But it's not like the ball is flying all over the place and he wasn't joining in. And he was hitting a bunch, you know, bunch of doubles. So there is, at the very least, you know, kind of doubles gap power.
All right.
And I would expect as he fills in a little more in the upper half, you know, I'd imagine a little more strength would probably help out a lot in that department.
Yeah, and it's not like he's, you know, a 0-5 home run guy. I mean, I could see him becoming like a 10-15 home run hitter, which is fine mm-hmm. when you consider, then I think that he's going to hit for a pretty good average. And at least in the short term, he should be able to play a pretty mean shortstop.
Yeah, it seems like, and I don't love using the term floor, but like a low-end reasonable expectation for him is current version of Ahmed Rosario, basically? Do you think that's fair?
Honestly, I don't remember the last time I even paid attention to any Mets game.
Nah, I understand that. I mean, Ahmed's hitting 256, 297, 418. He has 8 home runs and 300 at-bats. So,
that seems power-wise, that seems about right for what mm-hmm. Mauricio could do. I think that he'll hit for a better average because his swing is just nicer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
do you think he's ever going to develop the ability to walk?
I mean, that's something I guess would comes with time.
Yeah.
And this season he's just hitting the hell out of the ball. And when you're on the streak like that, you know, he's an all-star. He's, I think, sixth or something like that in the league in batting average. So I feel like when you're on a streak like that, you're not really ever trying to draw your walks, even though
right.
if you wanted to, you could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're hitting when you're hitting so well, you just want to keep hitting.
And it's similar to our complaints about Kay not getting promoted sooner. Like, why would you ever work on your changeup if you can just spam curveballs? Why would you ever work on your plate discipline if you can hit everything that's being thrown your way?
Right. That's a good comparison.
He's also so young, you know?
Yeah, I mean, should we talk about less good news do we want to talk about first?
Well, I guess Mark Vientos.
Oh boy.
He has not been having a good season, numbers wise. Which is whatever. But the bat just looked so bad. It just looked very slow. It looked like he was swinging a bat made of, you know, like a vintage Babe Ruth kind of bat, you know, way too big for him. And consistently, he was getting beat by off-speed stuff on the outer half, down and away. Like,
just
with clockwork. Yeah, just flailing. Just really bad at-bats. And multiple games, multiple pitchers, you know, just kept going back to that one spot, and they just kept getting him out. And it's not, you know, it's not like this is double or triple A, where he's a complete player, where, you know, he is still pretty young for the league. I think he's one of the top couple of youngest guys, but you know, so he has that going for him. It's just not good to see though the bat speed being so slow. When I saw him last year in Kingsport, he had a good game, and I think he had like an opposite field double or something to that effect. And I noticed the bat was, you know, as compared to some other guys like Newton, I noticed the bat was kind of slow, but I kind of chalked it more off to he's picking a spot and he's just going for that spot and it worked. Whereas now seeing him being challenged by, you know, more advanced breaking stuff and just not, I don't know. It just, it wasn't pretty. And I think that the bat speed is basically the root cause of his struggles, and I don't know if that's something that is going to improve. He might, you know, his eye will get better. I mean, I guess the bat could get faster. He's not unathletic, but he's not particularly athletic either. He just looks very average. He's not ripped. He's not fat. He's not skinny. Not nothing.
Yeah, so I was going to ask what you thought of his conditioning. So
yeah, I mean, he could get more. You know, he could work on his upper body strength, and that would definitely make the bat quicker. And in addition to that, you know, some work on pitch recognition would do wonders, and that would be great. I don't know how likely that is to happen, but I don't know. Send him to Barwis? Don't send him to Barwis? I don't know.
I mean, it sounds like a guy who in, I don't know, 5 years is described as being a good breaking ball hitter, a la J.D. Davis, because he doesn't have the bat speed to hit fastballs.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to think any hits that he had. He was fouling off a lot of pitches, but, I mean, I guess those are the fastballs.
Hmm. That's pretty disappointing to hear, actually, because it looked like he was a potential breakout guy this season, and that hasn't come to pass.
I know. I mean, I was very high. I was comparing him to Nolan Gorman last year, and that has not exactly panned out at all. Mm. I mean, that's a little depressing.
He's what, 19?
Yeah.
Well, there's time for him to improve on that still. There's still physical development that can happen. Do you think it was in terms of like the swing mechanics, do you think he has like a suboptimal swing or something that's contributing to that? Or
no, the swing is fine. It's a little long, mm-hmm. but it's not like insanely long, like racking up the strikeouts.
Right.
Swinging, you know, he wasn't really swinging over pitches that would have been hittable. It just, he was that one zone down and away, just pounding that area and exploiting the hell out of it.
Darn.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about the most nuanced comment I have on that.
Yeah, that's a massive bummer. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, again, he's still young, there's still time, and let's just cross our fingers and hope for the best.
Did you see Newton at all?
I did, yes. Nothing I don't think really changed about him as compared to when I saw him last year. He has a long swing, and he's very skinny and a big, long swing. So that's where a lot of those strikeouts are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And the power is legit. I mean, he had one at bat, I remember, where he just basically muscled. It was basically a bloop, and he muscled it, but he muscled it into not really shallow, what I would consider shallow, into legit, like, the outfield on a bloop. And I was like, you know, wow.
So
he's another guy like him. Like Mauricio, where he's very lean and leggy. So a lot of the power that Newton already has, I think there's more to come as he fills in. But I think it would be ideal if, you know, some of that additional power from just physical strength and development mitigates changes to his swing that might cut down on his power. If that makes sense. Like, if they tinker around with his swing a little bit to be less exploitable, less long, and then hope that his physical development, his actual strength, kind of fills in what was lost for making his swing a little bit more controlled.
And from the way you describe it, the dude's a specimen. Like, him and Mauricio are pretty impressive physical specimens, so maybe he doesn't need to sell out for power.
I don't know if I'd call it. I don't know. I mean, obviously it's a very subjective and weird thing.
Uh huh.
Like, they're just very lean, long, athletic, quick. You know, a guy like Mike Trout is thick. Like, he's athletic, but like rock hard and thick.
His neck gets bigger every season.
Right. Like, so he that's a specimen. Mauricio. Newton, Hansel Moreno is another guy that is in that kind of mold. They're very long, lean, and leggy. Maybe they fill in, probably not like Trout, but.
Trout is like 80% neck at this point.
It reminds me of like how a tree grows with rings, his neck, like every year.
Everyone needs to be on Mike Trout's neck workout plan. That's how you become the best player in baseball.
Whatever works.
I mean, it seems like. I mean, do you think who has a faster bat? Let's put it that way: Vientos or Newton?
Oh, Newton, very, very easily.
I mean, that seems more. Like there's more reasons for optimism then, right? Because you can tweak that swing, and he has the natural skill to make a more conservative swing work, as opposed to Vientos, who maybe doesn't.
I would think so. I think that I don't really think Newton did very well in the games that I saw him. Mm-hmm. when he hits the ball, though, it's like a very, you know, it's like one of those kinds of things, like, you know, this guy hit the ball and it just sounded different. Like, when he hits the ball, it's a legit, like, crack.
Mm-hmm.
Vientos does not, never had that kind of crack to him. But a lot of the power, that crack that Newton is able to generate, it is from his swing. It's just, like, the amount of violence and torque in it. It's almost kind of like a Vlad Guerrero kind of swing. Like, not as good, obviously. Not, you know, Guerrero was a 300 hitter.
Like controlled chaos type of thing?
Right, like, Newton's not that much controlled, but it's a lot of chaos. So that's a good way of putting it, I guess.
Vlad's also Vlad might have had a lot of success, not exactly the swing you want your prospects to be modeling their game off of.
He did not do any of that shenanigans, but...
Let's think. Who else on that roster do we
have we talked SWR yet?
We have not.
You want to move on to the pitching side, I guess?
Sure. All right. See, I had him. Oh, here it is. Well, because I'm stupid, when I went, I brought a camera that did not have a charge in it. So, yeah. But overall, he looked good. The fastball was mainly, let's see here, 89 to 93. Let's see, 1-2, 294s. So, let's call those couple of 89s little blips. I'll just say he was low to mid 90s. He didn't really show much oomph on his fastball, I guess. It's not like he was rearing back and was able to hit, you know, 97, 98, which he supposedly was able to do when he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to cast a lot of doubt on those couple of reports.
Well, isn't it basically he's more or less stretched out into being like a starter for more or less the first time?
Well, no, he was a starter. He was a starter in high school, and he generally was sitting in this range. And then Woods Richardson.
He started to pop in shorter stints in the GCL and Kingsport,
That's the claim. So when he was drafted last year, all the reports basically said that he was kind of low to mid 90s guy. He himself claimed that he was not. He himself claimed that he was more mid to high 90s guy. There were no actual verifiable reports of that. All of this, you know, all of the sources, Perfect Game, Max Preps, things like that, all had him in that low to mid 90s range. So there was a bit of confusion about his velocity from the get-go. If you go back and read the draft report that I had on him, I included a couple of different links to different, you know, events and people that saw him saying different things. And then Woods Richardson refuting the lower numbers. Then in the GCL, again, we have no verifiable reports.
And anything you do have is coming from the team.
Right. So I think that there was a lot of confusion in what he actually threw. And obviously the team is looking to hype their guys. So I don't think that he ever actually threw 95 plus, let's say. I mean, he can throw.
It's possible that he did it in like a bullpen or something.
Right. As I say,
that's not like a game action. You know, you wouldn't expect him to carry that over and not lose anything, you know?
Right. Now, the good thing about the fastball is, even though it doesn't really, it has a little bit of arm side life, but it's not like it had like late pop or anything like that, but guys are singing through it, and a lot of that, and I checked with Jeff, and a lot of that is because it's a very high spin rate fastball, kind of like Ty Bachelor, how, you know, he was getting tons of strikeouts, even though his fastball wasn't, you know, triple digits or anything like that. It's harder to pick up on the movement when it's a high spin rate pitch. So that's good. And the curveball is very, very, very good. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So the game that I went to, I'm not sure how many strikeouts he had in total, but 5 of them were on the curveball. And it just has, you know, 12-6, it looked to me, and it's just a big, big, big break. And I hope that he doesn't get into habits of spamming that and just getting the strikeouts. He really didn't. He was mostly fastball. He threw a handful of what I thought were changeups. It's kind of hard to pick up on that sometimes, but all in all, he's throwing mainly fastballs, mixing in some curveballs, and then the occasional change.
I mean,
he doesn't. He wouldn't. I don't know. A lot of the helium that I think he had coming into the year, because of, you know, reports saying he was hitting 97, 98, whatever in GCL and Kingsport, is gone to me, mm-hmm. having seen him. So, I don't know. He's someone to obviously watch, but I don't know if I would put him in, like, a top 10 list or anything now. I didn't at the time. I think I actually ranked him 20. But with this information that we have now on him, I definitely would stand by ranking him, you know, around there.
Doesn't sound super dissimilar from the initial impressions we had of him, does it? Right? Like, where it was, I vaguely recall us saying, like, the velocity probably isn't this high. It's probably just playing up in short stints. It's probably reliever. But it sounds like the stuff might legitimately be a great reliever.
Yeah, no, I think if he was, let's say, transitioned to being a bullpen arm down the road, he could definitely be, like, a high leverage, you know, lockdown reliever. He works very quick. He's, you know, he likes throwing inside to guys. He doesn't let the batters get comfortable. Like, he comes right after them. That's the kind of guy that has, you know, you hear about, like, the mentality of a closer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how accurate that kind of stuff is, you know, but he definitely has that kind of mentality.
It's, I don't know, this doesn't seem all that different than what I expected from him, honestly. I mean, it would have been nice if he hit the high, like, I'm pretty sure that it was mediocre starter, good reliever. It would have been nice, with the chance to be a good starter if the velocity improves or he has another secondary. It would be nice if he had done those things, but it seems like he hasn't, so.
Yeah, and also keep in mind, he's like 18.
Yeah, I mean, he's unlike the prep guys, the Mets drafted this year, he's super young.
Yeah. So, like I remember saying in our when we went over the prospect list, like, he could miss a whole year to TJ and still be mm-hmm. playing with everybody that he was drafted with yep. when he comes back.
Unlike mm-hmm. Beatty, Wolf, and Allen.
Yeah, right. Like, this was a relatively aggressive assignment to send him to the Sally. I think he's probably the youngest player in the league. Not that that's, like, super important for pitchers, but
as a pitcher, I think he is. But in terms of actual everyday players, Mauricio is either the youngest or second youngest.
Yeah, that's probably.
Yeah, I know they're the same age. Mauricio, to BB Ref, he's the youngest qualified hitter in the league. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if he's younger than I should probably look that up while I'm on BBRef.
But not to make it too pessimistic on Woods Richardson. Like, I'm not trying to say, like, oh, he's just all illusion. Like, there is a very good pitcher in there.
Yeah.
I just don't see, like, you know, I don't see, like, front of the rotation upside or anything mm-hmm. like that right now.
Yeah, no. Okay. You know, we've all been saying pretty much all year we think he's, like, a very good reliever. You know?
Yeah, I think that with the reports of, you know, being able to hit upper 90s, that would have been very transformational. And a guy like that, if he did consistently hit upper 90s with a really good fastball and a developing curve, could be front of the line potential. But that just really is not him.
Yeah.
Right now.
This is far less concerning than the Vientos report. Like, we could put it. For like immediate context, like, this is
yeah
not
yeah, yeah.
great, but it's not super super bad.
Like you said, it's basically reinforcing what we already thought and knew. So that is him.
Did you see Zipucky at all,
Yes, I did.
Because I imagine this is going to be unfortunate.
Not too unfortunate. If I could find my notes on him that I literally just had in front of me, and then I moved around when I was getting the Woods Richardson information. Here we go. Zipucky. He only went a couple of innings in the start that I saw him. Mm-hmm. He was 89-92. He hit 93 once. No, he hit a 93 twice and 94 once. The curveball was not as good as I remember it in Brooklyn, but, you know, he's coming back, so it's to be expected. He was kind of guiding it a bit. And the changeup, he didn't throw many of them, but he was, you know, slowing down his arm and telegraphing the changeup. The fastball, though, it had that kind of late hop, though. The velocity, you know, isn't as, you know, I don't know if it's going to return, but as he is now, I think he could survive on being, you know, a low 90s left-hander.
Mm-hmm. It's a little disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, it's you wouldn't expect a guy to return to form, you know, immediately after Tommy John. He's still working his way back and stuff. I guess we'll see how he looks in July, August, you know, further down the stretch. If I'm not mistaken, this was his first start in like almost a month.
Yeah, he's only thrown 14 innings this season.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously they're treating him with, you know, they're treating him very cautiously. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't say that it's a bad report. I wouldn't say I would say it's skews on positive.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like it's not like he was sitting in like the firmly in the 80s. It was only a couple of pitches that he was in the 80s.
Okay.
You know, it's not like Marcos Molina last year when I saw him in Binghamton and he was like 85 to 89. He touched 90 or 91 like once or twice. At least Zipucky is hitting consistently in the 90s.
Right.
The arm slot is still kind of funky. So there's that aspect of deception. I'm assuming that he's another guy that has spin rate on his fastball, so that explains the kind of late hop that it had to it. And, you know, the curveball will come along, the changeup. You know, he is still a pretty raw pitcher to begin with before he had the Tommy John. So those things are still, you know, developing. Those are things that hopefully will continue to come along.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for developing him as we've said this for a couple months now, put him in that multi-inning relief kind of development path. Maybe that's what they're doing. Maybe they're just being super cautious. Not exactly sure. But if the curveball comes back and the fastball has enough deception and spin rate to work, that's a viable reliever.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he was really highly ranked because of his stuff. Is that really that good?
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, if you know, even if he comes to 75% of what he was, that's still a solid base to work with, you know?
And how many grades would you say the curveball is low? And with the obvious caveat that it's 14 innings, he needs more time to recover, but how many grades lower would you think the curveball is right now than it was pre-TJ?
I mean, I only saw him once in Brooklyn before Tommy John, and it was a couple of years ago, so it's kind of hazy.
Yeah, of course.
I wouldn't really say the curveball, like the break of the curveball was still pretty good. He was able to mostly command it. It's just that he was basically guiding it in. So, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, tipping off the pitchers. So I'm assuming that once he gets more innings, he'll be able to throw it with less telegraphing. And it was still
like a strength thing to me too, where he has to guide it instead of just kind of letting it rip and trusting his hand will get in the right place.
Right, and he's just, I don't know, it's hard how to put it. I just expecting too much, I guess, from a guy coming back from surgery.
Right. I mean, I guess we should just be happy he isn't Molina, right? He's not cooked.
Right. That's, yeah, there you go. I mean,
yeah, it doesn't seem likely that he'll be out of the organization within 6 months or
no. He wasn't like as exciting as he was when he played Kingsport in Brooklyn that year. But it's not like he's a former shell. It's not like he's a shell of his former self.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if he was just a name, Thomas Zupacki, with no other connotations that come with that, you know, we'd be like, all right, this is you know, it's looking okay.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's not as bad as I was afraid that was going to be, if I'm being honest.
I'd venture to say that that's pretty positive, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, the things that he needs to work on are things that either can be worked on or will come in time, mm-hmm, from just more repetition or whatever. And if the fastball velocity never comes back and he's basically in those low 90s and isn't able to touch like 95, 96, whatever, it's not the end of the world. It takes a lot of his, you know, value away, but it doesn't take all of it away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we just need to totally ignore any age-based expectations with him going forward and hope the stuff works out.
Right. I mean, even before Tommy John, even before this year, he had very few innings under his belt.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Tommy John is basically, you know, another lost year. So that didn't help either, but.
All right. That was not awful. Not awful. Is there anyone we're missing on this roster? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, anybody you thought was very interesting, Steve?
Well, let's see here. Wagner LaGrange, not really.
Yeah.
Chase Chambers, he's a big, thick guy, but you'd think he'd have a lot of power, but he doesn't, which is a little unfortunate.
Okay.
Hutchinson?
Chase Chambers.
No.
Oh, no, I'm asking now. Hutchinson, you saw Hutchinson, oh, right?
Yeah. Well, let me find, here we go, Bryce Hutchinson. I saw him coming out of relief, and then I saw him starting. So the numbers when I saw him coming out of relief were a little weird. Let me find that note. I told you guys I was very unorganized today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have his numbers as a starter, and he was basically sitting 90-93. Which is not bad. His slider was 80 to 85, curveball in the high 70s to about 80, and then through a few changeups in the mid 80s. And the biggest difference between that and when he was coming out of relief, I think he was coming out of relief for Woods Richardson for an inning or two, is he was throwing mainly like two-seam fastballs during that relief outing, and he was basically sitting like 87 to 89, which was uncharacteristic, you know, for a guy like him who's supposed to throw harder.
Mm-hmm.
Why he was doing that, I don't really know. And the two-seam fastball wasn't particularly good either. Here it is. Here's those numbers. Yeah, it was 87 to 89, topping out at 90 with the two-seamer.
Just seems underwhelming.
Yeah, he's a guy that he's been through a lot in terms of surgeries and just problems on the field. Not bad, not behavioral problems, but just like issues. I know he's had to deal with, like, he was overweight a bit. He had to lose some weight. He was had like a very bad like viral infection or something like that, and he lost a lot of weight because of that. And he's he's still a follow, I guess I would say, but I don't think that the upside is really there, you know, that much upside anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he had tremendous upside to begin with, you know, outside of, you know, draft day kind of projecting all of our dreams and hopes into these guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, he can definitely be a serviceable pitcher, I think. A lot of his stuff is kind of hittable, so that may have been why they had him throwing a lot of two-seamers that one night, is just kind of to give him something else that has some more movement. You know, just another, you know, way to play with hitters and their eye levels and everything, but I don't know. That, I guess, would be a sad report.
Mm-hmm.
Another sad report would be Chris Vile, who...
Oh, man.
Just retired.
Yeah.
And looking at... I saw him twice in relief, and looking at the numbers for that, it kind of makes sense because, I mean, I saw him last year when he came up to... He was with Columbia last year as well, but I saw him when he came up to Lakewood, and the fastball was like in the mid-90s, touching 96, 97. And when I saw him this week, both times, he was low 90s. So he had the triceps problem. And that clearly either was the main contributor or it took its toll on his arm. Whatever the case may be. But the fastball velocity was not there. And he was a guy that was always, you know, plus fastball and kind of making up everything else. And with that plus fastball, it kind of fell apart.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
I mean, this roster has so much, looked so interesting going into the season, and it's just, I mean, the record aside, because who cares, it's the minor leagues, it's disappointing.
Yeah. The one, you know, silver lining there, I guess, is that a lot of these guys, they were put on this roster as a challenge. So if they're not really up to the challenge yet, you know, they still have time. It's not the end of the world. It's not like they're, you know, 22-year-olds and they're flailing away at breaking pitches in low A. There's mm-hmm. still time.
Right.
Well,
glad one of us actually gets down to games and gets some in-person information.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I've never been to Columbia before. It was extremely hot and humid.
I
did not like. Like, literally, there was a Chipotle, like, 5 blocks away from where I was staying.
Mm-hmm.
Just walking back from Chipotle when I got lunch one day, I was just like, I need to go take a shower. Like,
Like walking through soup?
Yeah, it's like when you feel the sweat, like, dripping down, like, the back of your back, and you're just like, That kind of heat.
Yeah, like you open your door in the morning, it's like jumping in a pool. It's ugh.
Yeah, I mean, there were two. I think it was Monday, the first day I got there like in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m. on Monday morning. So that Monday was very rainy, not a good time. The next day it was very humid. The next day it was rainy again, and then the Thursday, Friday, and Saturday was nice. It was extremely hot, but it was less humid, so I would prefer, I guess, like 90 degrees with sun, but not as much humidity.
Right.
Let's see, what else? Segra Park was okay. I don't know, nothing really jumped out at me. I guess kind of being spoiled with MCU Park right nearby, right on the water. The Stadium Yankees Stadium right nearby, right on the water. The Trenton Thunder Stadium, again, nearby, right on the water. Obviously, Yankee Stadium and City Field, two major league stadiums nearby. We kind of get spoiled a bit. So for, you know, I don't want to call Columbia Nowheresville because it is the capital of South Carolina, but for a place that I guess is out of the way in terms of baseball, you know, it was a nice stadium, but nothing, I guess, really jumped out at me about it.
Do you have one of those dope ass glow in the dark hats?
I've already had the Firefly one, the hat I bought, I think, the year that they became the Fireflies. And then earlier in the year, I bought one of the Chicharrones hats.
Sweet.
What else about South Carolina or the Fireflies? I don't know. It was just fun. Being able to take a week off from work to go somewhere new and literally just do nothing but watch baseball is always...
That does sound great.
That's like living the life, you know? It would have been better, I guess, if I had brought my laptop charger, because then I would have had my laptop. But, you know, oh well. So, yeah, that's the Columbia Fireflies top to bottom, I guess.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, all right, well. I guess we'll move on to, oh, yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of our guys played for the Columbia Fireflies. Or maybe the Savannah Sad Nats, the team that preceded them.
Right.
Who do you guys got? Lucas, you can go.
Okay, so I had not heard of this guy before today. I went with Taylor Whittington, not even sure how to pronounce that. He was a draft pick in the 2009 draft, 39th round, so way late in the draft. Mets took him out of college. He's a lean 6'3", had a low 90s fastballs, low 90s fastball with a slider that didn't do a whole lot, and a changeup that also didn't do a whole lot. For his career, he never made it particularly far. He bounced around in the low minors for a couple of seasons until 2012 and then dipped out at that point. So probably just a guy that – just an older guy they drafted to have the spot filled up. But this year, during like the last 2 weeks in 2011 – so 6.16 to 6.26, he had two starts where he ran a 1.5 ERA. Didn't strike out a whole lot of guys, but kept the ball on the infield, on the ground. So put together a two-start stretch that was actually pretty impressive.
Well, that is a guy that I can't even say, oh, yeah.
Because... Yeah, I went really, really deep this time.
Yeah, that is a deep track. Well, before we go on to... You can. Let's go to a break because I forgot to go to a break. So, everybody, hold on 1 second. We'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Avery Truffleman, and I'm hosting Curb's new podcast, Nice Try. It's stories about how people have tried to design a better world and what happens when those designs don't go according to plan. Season one is called Utopian. And it's about the perpetual search for the perfect place. It includes cannibalism, fascist architecture, polyamory, hermetically sealed domes, and Kourtney Kardashian's dining room chairs. But, you know, not necessarily in that order. New episodes of Nice Try come out every Thursday. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
This is Kara Swisher. I want to tell you about my podcast, Recode Decode. Every week, we have candid, in-depth conversations with people like Elon Musk, Nancy Pelosi, and Kathy Griffin. We talk about how they got to where they are today and how their work is changing our world. New episodes of Recode Decode are released every Monday and Wednesday, and we often have bonus episodes on Friday. Subscribe for free to be the first to hear them on Apple Podcasts or in your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Steve Saipa. I'm joined by Lucas Lajos and Ken Lavin. And Ken is about to give us his Oh Yeah, That Guy, because we are in the middle of Oh Yeah, That Guy, where we take a look back and remember some of the Mets minor leaguers of the past that we might have forgotten about. Or, as in the case that Lucas just presented, never even knew about to begin with.
Oh yeah, that I don't know that guy.
Yes.
Well, I do remember my Oh Yeah, That Guy. Danny Munoz, an infielder, who during this week in the 2014 season playing for the Las Vegas 51s, hit 313, 542, 563 in 26 PAs. So Danny Munoz was selected in the 8th round by the Mets out of Fresno State in the 2011 MLB draft and made his pro debut in Brooklyn and generally destroyed the New York Penn League. I think he led the league in average and on-base percentage. He hit 355, 466, 514 as, like, one of the elder statesmen of the league. And from there, a trend quickly emerged in which Munoz played okay defense and had excellent strike zone management that manifested in very gaudy walk rates. But the question soon became, you know, is he going to hit enough, and is he going to hit enough for power to, you know, be an actual offensive contributor? And that question kind of followed him for the majority of his career. So he spent 2012 with St. Lucie and played pretty well before being suspended for 50 games for a failed PED test. So, you know, yeah, not great. And then he came back in 2013 and the average, or the ability to hit for average, you know, the first major question mark started to come up. He hit 249, 384, 379. So beginning, you know, his hit tool began to show signs of its limitations. He came back in AAA and in the PCL, still didn't really hit particularly well, hitting 259, 372, 418. You know, again, in the dry, hitter's heaven of Las Vegas. He did a little better the following season in 2015, hitting 277, 362, 369, and more notably received a call up in mid-April to the big league team, his only, you know, cup of coffee in the big leagues, you know, in his career, and was generally pretty overmatched against big league pitching. He only got 32 plate appearances and hit 148, 258, 185. That's a 34 WRC plus, and, you know, quickly found his way back to the minors and hasn't really been heard from since. He was released by the Mets in June of 2016 and spent the rest of the season with the Marlins and the White Sox in their minor league systems. And then spent all of 2017 and most of 2018 in the Mariners system. And this year, he hasn't announced his retirement, but the Mariners AAA affiliate, the Tacoma Rainiers, hired him to be a corporate sales manager. So he's pretty much out of, like, playing baseball and just kind of living a normal life in the Tacoma area, working for his old team. So
I would like to see him announced as a pitch hitter.
It'd be very
fun. Yeah, that could feasibly happen.
Just kind of come out of the it's like luxury suite, loosen up the tie.
They have somebody like pull a hamstring in warm ups, and they're like, you know, Danny's here.
No, he's a guy that I remember as kind of being a victim, I guess, of the Mets' glut of just middle infielders, good and bad. You know, when I think of him, and there's obviously Cheech, there's, you know, all different ages, but there's Cheech, there's Matt Reynolds, there's Munoz, there was Guillorme, a lot of, I'm probably forgetting people too. Josh Satin, I think he played a little bit second base, just a lot of guys and not a lot of positions open for them.
I like to think of him also as sort of like why walk rate in the minor leagues is tricky, you know? Like a guy can walk a ton, and if he doesn't have a big league hit tool or doesn't have enough project for enough power, you know, it really isn't going to bode well for him, you know?
Yep, I know that's a problem that a lot of people had with, well, not really a problem, but that's a remark that came up a lot with Brendan Nimmo, that he was too passive.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys can be too passive in the minor leagues, and it doesn't really help you out. It'll help out your stats, your minor league stats, but you're not really necessarily help. It's not really necessarily helping your
development. Like, you have to be able to protect the zone enough, you know, to let the walk rate really play. And in Danny Munoz's case, he really couldn't. So,
well, the guy that I went with this week is Ricky Knapp. And when he was pitching for the Savannah Sednats on June 20th, 2015, he went 7.2 innings of shutout baseball. He gave up 5 hits. He walked 1 and he struck out 8 versus the Augusta Green Jackets. And Knapp was released last year, but I've always kind of had a soft spot for him. Greg had even more of a soft spot in his heart than I did. Overall, he's pretty generic as a pitcher. He was just basically right-hander, had a fringe average fastball, 88 to 92 or so, and then he had a kitchen sink assortment of pitches. There's a curveball, a slider, a changeup, a cutter, and all of that sat in that area of not being particularly good, but not being bad to the point of ineffective either. And I thought that since his dad was a former pitching coach, that he'd be one of those kinds of guys that would have his inferior stuff play up, because he'd have like a mystical kind of insider knowledge of baseball and he'd be able to get by, but that didn't exactly happen. He was solid through AA and then the PCL ate him up. Story of many guys with fringy stuff, unfortunately. He's still only 27, though. Nobody's picked him up since being released. And if a team needed, you know, some double A depth, maybe he'd be a little attractive if he was healthy. I think that someone should just teach him a knuckleball, and we go from there.
More pitchers should learn knuckleballs.
I mean, given that for a lot of it has a reputation as being like, you know, a pitcher's last hope when they're out of all other options, you'd think more guys would try it, but
do you guys remember Brandon Webb from the Diamondbacks like 10 years ago?
Oh yes.
Dude was like an ace and then suddenly disappeared because his shoulder was borked. He threw like 7 pitches including a knuckleball. He would pop knuckleballs, if I remember correctly, occasionally. I don't understand why more pitchers don't just whip it out occasionally. Just like, hit this if you can.
I mean, I guess it has something to do with being able to control it, which most guys are not able to do.
Sure, I mean, you might not have great control of it, but you throw it in as a wrinkle sometimes, and maybe if you just get it over, like...
It's also very hard to throw from, like, a normal arm slot.
That's a fair point, actually.
It's like, if you looked at, you know, R.A. Dickey, he had, like, a lower arm slot, and it's almost like he would push the ball to the plate at 80 miles an hour, you know? So, if you can, though, why not?
Yeah.
Well, if you guys have any last words for the week?
You also saw Brooklyn last week, right?
Yes, I did see Brooklyn last week.
Any thoughts from there?
Last week, last night, what am I saying?
Oh, nice.
No, nothing particularly jumped out at me.
How'd all the seniors look? Seniory?
It was just a very generic team.
Yeah. And Mangum isn't even there yet, so like, there's nothing to...
Yeah, Matt Cleveland was mildly interesting. He was a prep guy that was picked in 2016, and he was known as a guy with a pretty good fastball and a lot of rawness, and a couple of years later, that's still pretty much the case. And, that was about the highlight of the game, I guess. There were fireworks, so that was nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm waiting to get out there until Mangum shows up.
Yeah. I don't know why, but...
I
was thinking about going today because they had the Mensch on the Bench giveaway, but... Then I wouldn't be able to be here with you guys and all of our listeners recording this great podcast that everyone should rate and review and subscribe to.
Nice. Smooth.
Uh-huh. So, I am Steve Seipa. You you could follow me at Steve Sipa on Twitter. Lucas is at ElVlahos343, and Ken is at KenLavin91. And if you do not want to reach out there, you could email us at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. Any questions, comments, concerns, whatever, send us an email. So we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets, love the Mets.